Hey everyone, husband here.
And I'm wife. If you've been listening to us, then you know we're all about reading the Bible and reacting to it on our first read-through. Cuss words, crying, laughing, and more.
We're passionate about creating a podcast that takes the sanctity out of the sacred text and simply stating it as we see it.
But we can't do it without your help. We're asking for your support to help us keep this podcast going.
There are two ways you can donate.
Text SACDIS, that's SACDIS, to 533-555 if you're in the U.S. with a one-time donation. Any amount helps.
Or if you'd rather start a sustaining membership, sign up on our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Membership levels start as low as $2 a month.
We are amazed and grateful for our fans that support us now, and you can become one too.
With your support, we can keep Sacrilegious Discourse alive and well for years to come.
So please donate today.
Text SACDIS to 533-555 if you're in the U.S.
Or sign up for our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what today is and what we are doing?
Well, today is Saturday, which means that we're probably doing...
Q&A Saturday!
That's right. And what are we Q-ing and A-ing today?
We are Q-ing two things.
Okay.
And the first cue is I wanted to learn a little bit more about the Rechabites and if they are Levites.
Okay.
What the fuck is that about?
Sure.
So that's like on a small scale. So that one's going to be like meh.
Short, quick.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's a few facts about Rechabites.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
On the bigger end of the spectrum, what's going to take us a little time because this one's kind of interesting is the why the fuck are the books in different orders?
Oh, see? Yeah. I've been pushing this all along. I've been like, hey, let's figure this shit out.
Okay, here's the thing. I know this is just the intro, so I'm not getting into it.
Right.
I will tell you that the answer is both more boring than you think it is, but that all of the history that I'm going to throw at you is like really interesting.
So boring, but not boring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. You understand me.
Now, after you listen to today's episode, you'll find out what it's like to be bored and excited at the same time.
And that is what it's like living inside my brain.
Awesome. All right. Well, are you ready to answer some cues?
I sure as fuck am.
Well, let's do this.
Okie dokie.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
All right. So first we're going to talk about those Rechabites.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And I am absolutely 100% positive that I am saying it wrong. And that's okay, because I am neither a scholar nor an academic.
So when you do research, you don't research on the pronunciation?
No, usually not. It just doesn't occur to me. It's not like I'm actively avoiding it. It's because research is done silently as I'm reading.
I was just asking, you know,
the
I didn't
only,
know.
The only time that I actively do pronunciations is in my studying of the Latin language.
Yeah.
And I will listen to words over and over and over again.
Got it.
Yeah. But just for like actual research, I'm just silently reading.
Got it.
So, no, I probably should look it up, but I honestly almost don't care. And that's probably bad. So I probably shouldn't have said that. But it's true. Do you care how I pronounce it?
I mean, ultimately, no. As long as, you know, we learn about it, it's still basically the same thing. So
right. It's just, I mean, are we ever coming back to these Rechabites? I don't think so.
Nah, I don't know.
Based on my research, I don't think so.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about them guys a little bit.
Sure.
So remember God promised them that they shall not want a man to stand before me forever, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, they're going to be always good in his eyes no matter what, forever and ever and ever, right?
Yep.
That's interpreted by Jewish scholars to mean that they shall become scribes and members of the Sanhedrin. And I know we talked about the Sanhedrin before. I don't really remember what it is. It's just a group of, like, people that make decision-y things.
Okay.
I think we're not there yet is why I'm like, we'll talk about them
later. Yeah, it sounds familiar. I just don't know exactly. Right.
Yeah, they're just, they're smarties. I also think it has to do with, like, Kabbalah stuff.
Okay.
Like, they're just a conference of old guys that sit around a table and a conference table and make decisions about things. That's my impression of what the Sanhedrin is.
Got it.
Okay. So the Reshevites, you should be aware, did actually become scribes. Okay.
Oh, okay.
That was apparently mentioned in First Chronicles, which I don't remember.
I don't either.
But yeah. I also didn't give a shit about the Reshevites, Mites, and I might have just forgotten.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, or not forgotten so much as didn't care to pay attention.
Got it.
Because sometimes that happens to me. I forget to pay attention. So anyway, they did indeed become scribes, and they did indeed go on to sit with the Sanhedrin.
So just to be clear, I did look it up here real quick just to make sure. The Sanhedrin was actually a Jewish court system with both a legislative and judicial powers.
Okay.
There was two. There was a great Sanhedrin and a lesser Sanhedrin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. So it wasn't far off. I just wasn't totally correct.
Right, right. And they played a crucial role in interpreting religious law, overseeing religious practice, and handling some of the political influence and stuff like that.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Great
just
job.
Thought, you know, we're here. I might as well look it up, you know?
Sure, sure. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It, again, not really practical to what we're doing today.
No, but I mean, but we're mentioning it, so I thought I'd throw it out there.
Good on you. This is a Q&A after
all. That's right, right. Kay. And I had a Q, so I thought I'd A it.
Way to go, eh? All right, so it had been observed that God's covenant with the Reshevites, or I'm sorry, it has been observed by scholars and stuff, that God's covenant with the Reshevites was superior to the covenant that God made with David. And let me explain why. Let me explain why.
Okay. Yeah.
Because David's covenant was conditional, according to Psalms.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It depended upon things.
Mm-hmm.
While God's covenant with the Reshevites was without reservation. He's like, period, the end. Y'all are good forever. That's the end of the sentence.
The fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that all about?
That's about when men write down sentences, they don't necessarily plan ahead for the repercussions and compare this sentence to a sentence in a different place.
Yeah.
That's what that's about.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Scholars do agree that the Reshevites represented a reaction against Canaanitish civilization.
Okay. So basically the idolatry and stuff that was going on in Israel at that time.
Yes.
So,
yes. Okay. In the wilderness, the religion of Yahweh was the religion of a simple nomadic people, devoid of all of that ritual and, you know, all the weird things that they were doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was greater wealth in the cities of Canaan, and you know, all of that came together to make the Canaanites very just active and impressive and all of that. And so they just wanted to shun that, and they were like, bitch, bye.
Right. Got it.
Okay, so that answers that question kind of some.
Sure.
Like, sure. They went on to do stuff and then disappeared into history.
Right, right.
Bye.
Yep.
Okay, so now let's move on to the better question.
Okay.
Okay? Why the fuck is the Sanhedrin, the Septuagint, people start with S. Why the fuck is the Septuagint in a different order, particularly we notice this in Jeremiah.
Yeah.
From the Bible that we are reading.
Right.
Right? That's the question that you had that you kept bothering me about.
Well, only because you kept mentioning it. So, like, it wouldn't have been relevant to me, or I wouldn't have really even cared if you hadn't mentioned it so often. So I was like, well, I need to know why.
So, okay, there's several different answers, and I'm going to go through some history. Okay. Mm-hmm. And some of the history may have you kind of looking at me like, how the fuck is that relevant?
Right.
Or
because I do that.
Yeah. You also look at me like, that's interesting, but it's not related to this.
Could you stick on subject,
please? Yes. And I'm going to tell you, all of this is on subject. Okay? Okay. It's all related. So just stick around for the ride.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
So the order of the books in our Old Testament has been changed from the order in the 3-volume Hebrew Bible.
Okay.
Okay. And the 3-volume Hebrew Bible consists of the Torah, which is the law, mm-hmm. the Nevim, which is the prophets,
okay,
and then the Ketuvim, which is the writings.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
So those are the 3 sections. And we have all of those just in a different order in our book.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's already different from
how it's
the
set up
Hebrew in the Bible versus what we're reading.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's before we even get into the Septuagint.
Okay. Sure.
So, are you following me?
I'm following you.
Okay. Now, the Septuagint is sometimes, here's where we go off a little bit. Okay? Okay. The Septuagint is sometimes referred to as the Greek Old Testament, which that's how I often reference it. That's the Greek translation.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Vulgate, which is the Latin translation.
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's the Septuagint is also referred to as the translation of the 70. And
okay.
the 70 has to do with the number of translators that it had. And that's where the word Septuagint actually comes from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so when they abbreviate it as LXX, which stands, that's 70.
Right.
So that's how they do.
Got
okay?
it.
Okay. So, which is interesting because those are Roman numbers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So we've got a Roman numerology abbreviation for a Greek translation of a book that was originally written in Hebrew.
Well, cultures of Greek and Roman were pretty similar, right?
Yes.
So their numbering system might have been the same numbering system, whatever. I don't know. I'm speaking out of my ass right now, but I mean,
don't believe so, but I could be mistaken.
Okay.
If not, I do know that the Romans took over and changed it.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, for that matter, you could say, wasn't that all very similar to Latin? Because, you know, they're all very intermingled.
Sure.
But be that as it may, 70 translators.
Yes.
LXX.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all the same.
Okay? Yep.
It is the earliest Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible from the original Hebrew. Okay?
Uh-huh.
The full Greek title derives from the story recorded in the letter of Aristeus to Philocrates. So these are some Greek dudes.
Okay.
Okay. That, quote, the laws of the Jews were translated into the Greek language at the request of Ptolemy II, Philadelphus, who was the Greek pharaoh of Egypt in 285 to 247 BCE.
The Greek pharaoh. I didn't know they had pharaohs.
That's why I was like, whoa.
What the hell?
Right? There was a Greek pharaoh of Egypt.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, huh. I would love to study some
that's a
Egyptian
whole other,
history.
Like,
yeah, that's...
Greek history, you mean?
Isn't that what I said?
No, you said Egyptian.
Oh. Well, I mean, he was the Greek...
Pharaoh
of... Hold on. What
Greece.
Did I say? No, you, hold on. He's the Greek pharaoh of Egypt. That's what I said. That's why I said...
The Greek pharaoh of Egypt.
And that's why I said Egyptian history.
So he was Greek,
mm-hmm.
but he was the pharaoh of Egypt.
During those years that I mentioned.
During those years that you mentioned.
Yes.
Okay.
And he requested, according to these two Greek dudes, can I please have a translation?
What is a Greek dude doing being pharaoh of Egypt?
That's why I said I would be interested in studying some Egyptian history. And you corrected me and were like, no, Greece. And I'm like, no, the guy was from Greece, but he was basically the king of Egypt.
Okay. All right.
Right?
That's
cool.
It's interesting.
It's weird.
Right.
Okay. So you can see why I'm like, the answer might be boring, but we are studying some interesting things along the way.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
I always just assumed that the Greek Septuagint was like done in Greece, but no, it was probably done in Egypt, apparently.
Maybe. Could be.
Right.
So anyway, this Greek king of Egypt was like, can I please have a translation according to these two guys. And so 72 Hebrew translators were brought in, six from each of the 12 tribes of Israel.
Okay.
We're going to get into that in a minute.
Sure.
I'm sorry, who? What?
And they just brought them in.
Sure.
Okay.
The translators were sent from Jerusalem to Alexandria to translate the Tanakh from Biblical Hebrew into Koine Greek, which is that ancient Greek stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. For inclusion in the Ptolemy's library. So he just wanted it for his library.
Got it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Biblical scholars agree that the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, which is the Torah, the law,
yeah,
the Pentateuch, if you will, were translated from Biblical Hebrew into Koine Greeks by Jews living in this Ptolemaic kingdom.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah. In Egypt. Jews sure. living in Egypt.
Got it.
Okay. Probably in the earlier middle part of the 3rd century BCE.
Got it.
Okay. You okay. following me?
I'm following so far. Yeah.
Okay. Because you keep looking confused.
No, I'm just trying to follow. I'm trying to keep track in my head here. So.
Okay. Every time I say this Greek king of Egypt, your face twists.
It throws me off
what?
So much. Yeah.
I know. I'm pretty much done with him though. But okay. I got to say it one more time. Greek king of Egypt.
Or
this
Pharaoh,
Ptolemy, like. This Pharaoh. Right?
Yep.
Crazy. Okay. Right. The remaining books were likely translated in the 2nd century BCE, but that's a different story.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some Targums, which I will tell you what that is in a minute, translating or paraphrasing the Bible into Aramaic, were also made during the Second Temple period.
Okay.
So what the fuck is a Targum, you ask me, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. A Targum was an originally spoken translation of the Hebrew Bible, also called the Tanakh, that a professional translator would give in the common language of the listeners. So it was basically like a guy would read the Bible and then translate it out loud, telling the people that were listening, like, if the book is in Greek or whatever, and these people are, not Greek.
Right.
Whatever
they would read
they
it in whatever language they understand.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that they could hear it.
Yeah.
This had become necessary near the end of the 1st century BCE. BCE. Sorry, I got stuck there. As the common language was Aramaic. And by then, Hebrew was used for little more than schooling and worship.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
So... a lot of times these Targums were not just translations, like as this person was standing before a crowd, it was also, they would become sermons.
Got it.
So, there were a lot of people listening and then probably writing shit down in their own languages too.
Right.
Because they would, be hearing this stuff. And we have found like so many little bits and pieces that don't all fit together.
Okay.
Of stuff. Okay. Right.
Sure.
Obviously, not everybody in a crowd was listening. I'm just saying.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Few people could speak and even fewer could read in the Hebrew language during the Second Temple period. Greek and Aramaic were the most widely spoken languages at that time among the Jewish community. The Septuagint therefore fulfilled this need.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the accuracy of the statement by Philo of Alexandria regarding the 12 tribes of Israel that I mentioned we were going to get back to is extremely dubious. Okay.
Okay.
It implies that the 12 tribes were still in existence during King Ptolemy's reign, which, hello.
Is not true.
Yeah. And it also assumes that the 10 lost tribes of the 12 tribes had not just been forcibly resettled by Assyria almost 500 years previously.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
So, a little bit of question there. Like,
sure.
The 12 tribes. Okay.
Right.
Sure. Later rabbinic tradition considered the Greek translation as a distortion of sacred text and unsuitable for use in the synagogue.
Okay.
They were like, this is Greek and it's not right. Get it out of here.
Got it.
Okay.
Yep.
According to, these names are hard. Okay. According to Aristobulus of Alexandria.
Yeah.
Portions of the law, which would be the first five books, they were translated from Hebrew into Greek long before the well-known Septuagint version.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He stated that Plato and Pythagoras knew the Jewish law and borrowed from it.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So who knows when and what?
Got it.
As usual, history is a mystery.
Right.
It is unclear to what extent Alexandrian Jews accepted the authority of the Septuagint. Manuscripts of the Septuagint have been found among the Dead Sea Scrolls and were thought to have been in use among various Jewish sects at the time.
Got it. Okay.
Which is interesting.
It is.
Several factors led most Jews to abandon the Septuagint around the 2nd century BC. Or, okay. I'm sorry, the 2nd century CE.
Okay.
Sorry, all common right. era.
Yeah.
The earliest Gentile Christians used the Septuagint out of necessity, since it was the only Greek version of the Bible, and most, if not all, of these early non-Jewish Christians could not read Hebrew.
Got it.
So they only used it very begrudgingly because they couldn't fucking read anything else.
Sure. So okay. that's interesting that early Christianity was based on mm-hmm. something that the Jewish folks in 200 CE pretty much just abandoned.
Yeah, right? So, that's cute.
Right?
Like, oh, yeah. Christians, you're so adorable.
Like, when it started divvying ways or, you know, splitting ways way back then.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And they were like, we're just going to steal some of this and we're going to steal some of that. And yeah.
Right.
They were always up to no good. The association of the Septuagint with a rival religion may have made it suspect in the eyes of the newer generation of Jews and Jewish scholars.
Ah, so that might have been why they were abandoning the Septuagint.
Yeah, as the newy Christians picked it up, the Jews
they
were like...
They wanted to distance themselves, so they're like, no, this isn't the true form, so...
Yeah, we're going to stick with the Hebrew, thanks. Yeah. Jews instead used Hebrew or Aramaic Targum manuscripts.
Okay.
See what I said? They were writing some of this, some of those speeches and sermons down.
Right.
Later compiled by the Masoretes and authoritative Aramaic translations.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's all that. Okay.
Sure.
The early Christian church used the Greek text, as we said, since Greek was the commonly used language of the eastern parts of the Roman Empire at that time.
Okay.
And the language of the Greco-Roman church, more importantly.
Sure.
Even though, like, the Romans were there, they were still speaking Greek.
Right.
So, while Aramaic was the language of the Syriac Christianity.
Okay.
Okay? Syria, Syriac.
Got
okay?
it. Yeah.
The relationship between... I'm having a really hard time, so I apologize when I stumble over my words. It's not all just because I can't pronounce stuff. It's also because my stutter is getting worse sometimes right now, today, just then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The relationship between the apostles' use of... The apostles being Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and all those other disciple-y guys of Jesus that we haven't got to yet.
Sure.
So the relationship between those guys... Use of the Septuagint and the Hebrew text is very complicated.
Okay? Okay.
Although the Septuagint seems to have been a major source for the apostles, it's not the only one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
They used several different versions of Bibles as they found
convenient.
Convenient. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. So Saint Jerome. You familiar with that guy?
I am not.
Okay. So my first introduction to St. Jerome was in the original movie Ghostbusters, when in the very beginning, and they come into the library, and they're questioning the librarian, and they're like, is anybody in your family crazy? And she says, my uncle thought he was St. Jerome. That's like seconds before Bill Murray asks her, are you, Alice, menstruating? Which is terribly sexist, no longer appropriate.
Right.
But I am from a previous time when that was still funny.
Sure.
And I'm slow to grow.
Right.
Okay. So, St. Jerome offered several examples of verses found in Hebrew texts, but not in the Septuagint. So, he was pointing out differences even back then.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The New Testament writers freely used the Greek translations, as we just said, when citing the Jewish scriptures or quoting Jesus doing so. implying that Jesus, his apostles, and their followers considered it somewhat reliable.
Okay,
since they quoted from it.
Yeah.
In the early Christian church, the presumption that the Septuagint was translated by Jews before the time of Christ and that it lends itself more to a Christological interpretation than second century Hebrew texts in certain places was taken as evidence that Jews had changed the Hebrew text in a way that made it less Christological.
Interesting, because the early Christians were like, this is the one.
Mm-hmm.
But the Jewish folks were like, this isn't the one, because fuck them Christians.
Picking this up.
And then later they're like, wait, no, the Jewish people were right. That one's more correct with what we want, so we're going to make that one the one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really weird.
It just goes to show that you can't trust Christians. Yeah. Just kidding. Just kidding. That's not what that proves. It just goes to show that... people are fickle, and they will always choose the most convenient path.
Yeah.
Yeah. St. Jerome broke with church tradition, translating most of the Old Testament of his Vulgate from Hebrew rather than from Greek.
Huh. Okay.
So he used the Hebrew to create the Vulgate.
Gotcha.
That's who St. Jerome was. He wrote the Vulgate, okay. The Latin version.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
His choice was sharply criticized by Augustine, St. Augustine, his contemporary.
Right.
Okay. And St. Augustine was like not impressed. He was like, you done fucked up, you piece of shit. And St. Jerome's like, what?
Right.
Although Jerome argued for the superiority of the Hebrew text in correcting the Septuagint on philological and theological grounds, because he was accused of heresy, he also acknowledged the Septuagint texts.
Okay.
He's like, well, I don't want to die over it or anything.
Right.
Fine. The Septuagint is fine. Whatever.
Sure.
But that didn't stop him from going ahead and translating it into Latin anyway.
Right.
Acceptance of Jerome's version increased, and it displaced the Septuagint's old Latin translations.
Okay.
Modern scholarship holds that the Septuagint was written from the 3rd through the 1st centuries BCE. Because remember, it wasn't like they sat down and just wrote it all at once.
Right.
Okay. So it was over the course of a couple centuries that it was all pieced together.
Yeah.
But nearly all attempts at dating specific books, except for the Pentateuch, which was definitely written early to mid 3rd century BCE.
Mm-hmm.
So except for those... all the rest, dating all of them, are extremely tentative.
You know what really strikes me here is that even Jesus and his disciples and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were relying on translations.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not the best translations at that.
Right, exactly.
And treating them as though they were, you know,
quote-unquote, the gospel.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's even questions... If you are to believe in God, there's even questions mm-hmm. of legitimacy of translation, even... back during Jesus's time.
Right. Like, what was Jesus reading again now?
Right.
Oh, you know, various translations of the same Bible, depending on whichever one made it into his library that day and fit his needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. I had no idea. Like, I'm just like, what? There's a Bible. The end.
Right.
Like, I just didn't know there was like, no, there's really not. There's really just not like the Bible.
I knew there was a lot of Bibles, but I didn't know, like, what all the histories were exactly.
Yeah, and this is a very juvenile, elementary description of what happened.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is so cursory. There's so much more than this.
Right.
And I'm definitely watering this down for myself, not our listeners. Okay, so the differences between the Septuagint and the other versions fall into four main categories.
Okay.
First of all, there were different Hebrew sources.
Okay.
Which, you know, which source are you translating?
Sure.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Okay. The second one is there were differences in interpretation, which that makes sense.
Right. Still are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The third one is there were differences as a result of idiomatic translation issues. So idioms did not translate well. Idioms are turns of phrase.
Okay.
Like if we were to say, okay, here's a really good example in modern day times. When I was in high school learning Spanish, We were learning a phrase, and when we got to the word blue jeans, it was just blue jeans. Like, there was no translation for it.
Yeah.
So, and that's not an idiom per se. That's just a phrase. But it's an example. Even today, shit does not always translate.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't. So, like, if we were going to translate the word hot dog, that does not translate into other languages. It would be frankfurter or wiener or, you know what I mean? Sure. Some other word.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would not necessarily grasp, if we said hot dog, what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah, why were they eating hot dogs back then?
Exactly. And it would not translate.
Right.
So, and that's the example I always give.
Yeah.
Because it's just so obvious to me.
Right.
Especially when you've got people that call them conies in other parts of the country.
I mean, we call them that here sometimes.
Yeah.
We have
Coney
Skyline
dogs.
And Gold Star. So.
Yeah, and they call them conies.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's there's another word for hot dogs, too. I can't remember.
Yeah, brats. I mean, they're not really hot dogs, but
those
like some
are
people
sausage,
call them brats. Right, yeah.
But still, yeah. Sure. No, there's another word that I'm trying to think of that doesn't matter all whatsoever. Okay. And I'll think of it like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
So anyway, so idioms didn't translate, okay?
Uh-huh.
And then there was the fourth one, transmission changes in Hebrew or Greek, meaning revisions, recensions, which means times that things were rescinded.
Right, right.
And copying errors.
Right.
So,
and I've read about some of the copying errors when I read a book by Bart Ehrman when he talks a lot about copying errors. And it's very interesting, actually.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So there's a lot of that stuff happening that, you know, that's before we even get into the actual order of the books.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
That's talking about how the Septuagint differs from other texts.
Right.
Okay. So one of the main challenges faced by translators during their work emanated from the need to implement appropriate Greek forms for various out-of-use terms used in the Hebrew Bible.
Okay.
So, for example, I'm trying to learn Latin, and there are ways that the words are structured that do not exist in English. For example, if we say two girls or two boys, the number two doesn't change. It's two no matter what. It's always just two.
Sure.
Okay. In Latin, the number will actually change based on the gender of the items that you're discussing.
Okay.
Right. And so you kind of have to know that ahead of time.
Yeah.
So that's just one example of shit don't always translate well.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they had to create, another Latin example. This one's even better. We're learning cities. One of them is Novum Eburacum. That's New York, which did not fucking exist in the time that Latin came around.
Right.
So we had to create that.
Why did we create it?
We can speak Latin.
But like, why wouldn't you just say New York?
Because different countries say New York differently. Different languages refer to New York in different ways. Like in Spanish, it's Nueva York something. I forget.
Okay. All right.
So to create a word in Latin, we all agree that in Latin, this is how you say it. Period. The end.
Got it.
So that's another thing.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense.
I suppose.
Well, if you are trying to speak Latin and you've got a Spanish speaking person trying to speak Latin and you don't know that how he says New York is different from how you say New York.
Right.
Y'all are saying different things.
Right.
So it makes sense. I promise.
Okay.
Okay.
All
right. Just trust me on this.
Sure.
All right. So modern Hebrew Bibles have 36 total books. Okay.
Okay.
The books of, and we have covered this before, the books of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles are considered one book each, not two.
Got it.
Right. We, later on, they were put in half because they were too long.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. The Protestant Bible, of course, divides Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles into two books following the Septuagint's method.
Right.
Why did the Septuagint separate them? Right? That's a good question.
Sure.
I mean, we follow that model, but why? Why did they do that?
Right.
The reason that the Septuagint divided these three books into halves for a total of six instead of three
Yeah.
Was for very practical reasons. They could not fit all of them onto one scroll.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Hebrew text does not contain vowels. Like, you know, even you could see that in the word Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
There's no vowels in that word.
Right.
Right. Right. Thus, it was much shorter than the Greek text. So the entire book could easily be put onto one scroll in Hebrew. But then when they translated it over to the Greek,
right,
they had to cut it in half.
Okay.
All the long books became two instead of one.
Got it.
So that makes perfect sense. I didn't know that. I just knew, like, yeah, it's probably too long, so they cut it in half. I didn't know it was literally, physically too long.
Right, right.
All right, so the grouping of the books now, here we go. We're getting into the meat of it.
Okay.
Okay? Is according to their literary character. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the Hebrew Bible divides the scripture into three divisions, the law, the prophets, and the writings. The Torah, the Nebum, and the Ketublim, or the Tanakh, if we're referring to it as a whole. The entire collection is the Tanakh.
Got it.
Okay. Some of the books of history, which are the Joshua through Kings bits,
yeah,
are called books of prophecy. First, the historical event is recorded, and then the divine explanation is given. So those bits are separated because they put those bits together.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, other Bibles don't, because they're not. You know what I mean?
Not exactly, but
so the Bible that we read puts these prophecy pieces as part of the history pieces.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
The Bible has moved, the current Bible that we read has moved them from the prophets where they might normally be and stuck them in the history section.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So they would have been, like you're saying, that the part that we're reading now with regard to Jeremiah mm-hmm. would have been in with, like, the King Chronicles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I was not following. I couldn't really place what you were getting at exactly. But that makes sense because that's something that we have
commented on.
Yeah, like, yeah. This makes, why are we doing this
why
twice?
Why are we going
three
back?
Times,
three times now because we did that with going from Kings to Chronicles. It's like, wait, we already read this. This is bullshit.
Yeah.
And now we're reading all of these other guys and they're covering the same fucking ground again.
Right.
Yeah. That's why.
Right.
It's only in modern times that the books have been placed in a consistent order. Modern times being like the last several centuries.
Sure.
Okay. The reason has to do with the invention of printing. The printing press pretty much made it solid.
So once they were like, well, this is the way it is now forever. Yep.
Once the Old Testament began to be printed, the order of the books became pretty standardized.
Got it.
So it's in ink now. Can never be changed.
Can't be changed, yeah.
Right. The order of the books for the Old Testament in the English Bible is derived from the Latin Vulgate. Okay.
Okay.
So it's different. It was the standard translation for Western Christianity for 1,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah. In the Old Testament, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, the Septuagint, mm-hmm. is usually seen as the basis of the order of the books which are found in the Vulgate. Yet, the manuscripts of the Septuagint have much variation in them. Okay?
Okay.
So, they took a mess and mixed it up, and then mixed it up some more when they translated it.
Got it.
So, everything's a mess. Got it?
Yeah, sure.
Everything's a mess. That's the end of, like, no, that's not the end of this. I'm just saying at the end of it, that's basically what we're going to get to is that everything's a mess.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. The Hebrew and Greek manuscripts of the Old Testament usually have the same order for the first 5 books of Moses and for the 4 books of the prophets, you know, the prophets.
Sure.
Right? Okay. They go by history, Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings, okay, which comes after the books of Moses.
Okay. Yep.
Yet this was not always the case. And this is still not always the case. For example, the Syriac Peshitta.
I don't know.
An ancient translation of the Old Testament has the book of Job between the books of Moses and the book of Joshua.
Hmm.
So, I mean, shit has always been in a different order.
Yeah, I mean, that one could go in anywhere. It's just a story, you know?
So. But it's considered a history.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
This occurred because it was believed, get this, it was believed that Moses wrote the book of Job.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
The fuck?
Right.
How could that even be?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to put a hard no on that. Okay. Regarding the remaining books of the Hebrew scriptures, the Hebrew order is different from the Greek order, which we know. No shit. Right? The Hebrew order consists of the law, the prophets, and writings. Okay? The law, the prophets, the writings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? While the Greek order has the law, the history, the poetry, and the prophets.
Okay.
Okay? And that's the way we read it. English versions have followed the Greek order of the books through the Latin rather than the Hebrew order.
Okay.
And that's why the books that we're reading are in a different order from the Septuagint.
Right, but it still doesn't explain why the chapter is messed up inside the chapter or inside the book. Like, you explained why the books were out of order.
That basically is the same thing, just on a more pointed scale.
Okay.
It answers all of it. It's because it was all a mess.
Got it. So basically, they didn't know what the fuck they were doing. Everything's screwed up.
And now it's in ink.
Now written in stone. And now it's set in stone.
No, so. What's really funny is that, like, when things were written in stone, you could still change it, right? It's not written in stone, but could you imagine changing anything like that today?
It would cause so much of an uproar. It wouldn't even be funny. Yeah.
Yeah. I just find that, like, really, is that the correct use of the word ironic?
You'd have churches splitting apart from each other. You'd have all kinds of shit happening.
Yeah.
It'd be nuts.
How dare you put Job by Moses?
Right.
What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't really give a shit. It doesn't impact me
anymore. No. It doesn't really impact them either, probably.
No.
You just, you know.
Something to fight about is always
get
fun.
Upset. Yeah, somebody's going to get upset about stuff. So,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was basically the explanation then?
That was basically the explanation. See,
okay.
What did I say? The answer was a lot more boring than you think it would be, but the history was really interesting
getting there. Yeah.
See? Excited and bored at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could tell from your face you were bored through some of it.
I was a little bit, but I can't hide those things very well.
No, you cannot. You start fidgeting and you're like, are we done yet?
Anyway, I'm sorry I was bored.
That's okay. Somebody found this interesting.
Somebody
found it
interesting.
And it was me. And I'm willing to bet one other listener.
I was definitely
there.
Interested in a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
It just said at the end, it was like, yeah, they move stuff around. And I was like, whatever.
I know.
They move stuff around.
But some of it was interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was our Q&A for today.
It was.
And that means that we're going to be back tomorrow, I think, on Sunday, which is
Easter. Happy Easter, motherfuckers.
And I think we're planning on doing a special Patreon episode on...
I think we're going to maybe talk about Lent.
Yeah.
Because we don't know that term.
Our Sundays fall... Well, I mean, obviously, Easter always falls on a Sunday, but, like, yeah. You know, we should make it relevant, right?
I think we've talked about Easter before.
Right.
But I don't think that we've covered Lent, because I'm still not really familiar with what
it is. You brought up earlier Fat Tuesday. I'd never even heard of that.
You were like, what the fuck is a Fat Tuesday?
But then you're like, it's Mardi Gras. And I'm like, I've heard of Mardi Gras.
You go, Mardi Gras is not anything to do with that. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it is.
I didn't know.
And it turns out I was right. You should admit that.
You were right.
Yeah.
But I am a little bit interested in finding out a little bit more about all that.
So. Only vaguely, though. I tell way too much history.
When it gets boring, I'll just shut down. So.
You do. Yeah. You do.
All right, guys. That was our Q&A. We will be back tomorrow with a Patreon. And then I'll get the weekly wrap-up out. And then we'll be back on Monday with...
Jeremiah chapter 36.
All right. We'll see you then.
Bye. Thanks, Patreon.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. and it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.